Last month, a federal judge sentenced a 90-year-old Indiana man to 3 years in prison for his role in transporting more than 1,200 kilograms of cocaine into Michigan. The man's age spurred new attention to an old problem. Illegal drug trafficking is an ongoing epidemic across the United States. Now, a Michigan State University professor has created a new way to track the flow of cocaine into the country. Current State's Kevin Lavery is here to tell us more. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Mark. That's right. Dr. Siddharth Chandra is an economist at MSU, and he's also the director of the Asian Studies Center. He has taken publicly available data from the National Drug Intelligence Center and created a map that links U.S. cities based on the cost of cocaine in those locations. And this map indicates where cocaine is coming from and where it's going. So I asked Dr. Chandra how he became interested in this project in the first place and what all this data means for law enforcement.
One of the first things we learn in economics is that prices don't just tell you how much it's going to cost for you to buy something. They actually carry a lot of additional information. I've been doing research on drug consumption and drug prices for many years now. And when I came upon these data about 3 years ago, I thought I had found a really unusual set of information on drugs, which I thought could be used in a variety of interesting ways.
We're looking at your computer screen, Dr. Chandra, and you have a map of the United States, a series of colored circles, and there are different colors. The first most striking thing I see is a large concentration of blue circles in the northeastern United States.
Right. What this map is showing is I took the prices of cocaine, of powdered cocaine, for about 110 cities across the United States, and these are all major cities, and first asked the very simple question of where does cocaine tend to be really expensive, and where does it tend to cost a lot less? And I divided these cities up into four groups, what we call quartiles, in which the quarter of the cities that were the most expensive were colored blue, and the quarter of the cities that were the cheapest were colored red. And what you're seeing on the map is that the most expensive cocaine is found in the Northeast, and the cheapest cocaine is found all along the west coast of the United States and down in the south, near the border with Mexico. So Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Louisiana, and even Florida tend to have the cheapest cocaine.
My inference here is that given that cocaine is grown in the tropics, namely in South America, as it pushes its way north, it's changing hands and the price is getting higher and higher the further north you go.
That's exactly right. And so, one of the really important observations on this map is that we have a price gradient, right? A sort of slope along which the price increases. And that essentially tells you about the direction of flow of cocaine.
Los Angeles and San Diego, for example, are in the bottom quartile. These are southwestern port cities where it's probably easier to obtain cocaine than, say, in Boston. But I'm looking all the way at Seattle, and Seattle is in the same category as Los Angeles, although it's a pretty good distance from Los Angeles.
You know, this is an intriguing question. And we can start asking, we can start looking at individual cities and asking questions about why they tend to have cheaper or more expensive cocaine. So let me start with Seattle, and I think there could be a couple of reasons why cocaine is so cheap all along the West Coast. One is that if cocaine were coming in on a boat, right, then Seattle does become one of the logical landing points. It's one of the largest seaports on the western seaboard. It also is a major stop on the I-5, the major interstate highway that goes up the West Coast. So it could very well be that some of the cocaine comes, across the border and then makes its way straight up to Seattle before going through any more transactions and therefore stays relatively cheap.
Just looking at this map, for example, let's take Houston, Texas, which is in the bottom quartile. It's a southern port city. If cocaine were to migrate to Chicago and there's overlapping yellow and green circles, and then to Detroit, where again you've got overlapping green and blue circles, so the markets are getting progressively more expensive. What is really the correlation between the price of cocaine in Houston and the price of cocaine in Detroit?
You mentioned that there are some areas where you see two different colors for cities, indicating that there are some cities that have cheap cocaine that are surrounded by cities that have more expensive cocaine. And now let's think about the logic of that, right? we can probably infer that a cheap city that's surrounded by expensive cities is probably a hub city, and it's probably the city from where the cocaine flows outward to the surrounding cities. And we can see this with other drugs as well in the United States. There are very often cheap cities that are surrounded by expensive cities. Let me get to the other question, and that is that of correlation, right? So the map that you see here just tells you about prices. It tells you where cocaine is cheap and where it's expensive. But it doesn't tell you specifically which pairs of cities might actually be connected with each other, right? And so you want to start thinking about how shocks in the price of one city may look like or not look like shocks in the price in another city. So let's say drugs are coming in through San Diego and they're going up to San Francisco. Well, if all of a sudden, for whatever reason, the price of cocaine shoots up in San Diego, then the cocaine, the part of that package that is going on to San Francisco, is also going to see a spike in the price, right? So the prices are very likely to move in tandem with each other. And that's something that we can very easily detect using statistical methods.
Now, I have to ask, shy of being an informant for the DEA, how do you know how much cocaine costs?
So the National Drug Intelligence Center is the organization that publishes these data on costs. And these come out in these publicly available documents, these digests that they produce. They get their data from law enforcement officers. They have informants who are in these cities. And what they do is they compile these data and then they compute some kind of average. And those are reported to the National Drug Intelligence Center from the law enforcement agencies in the different cities. So these data are not very specific. They are potentially vulnerable to the problem of noise. So it may be that if somebody has the wrong information, that wrong information gets registered in the data that I'm analyzing. And so there are some limitations to this kind of research. And a key one is to realize that individual data points may not be as robust, if you will, as the larger picture, right? Now, the moment you look at this map, it becomes very clear. This map is really a geographer's dream. You very rarely see phenomena that are so clean, you know. All the reds are on the West Coast and towards the south of the U.S. All the blues, the expensive cities, are up in the Northeast. This is about as clear a geographic phenomenon as it can get. And so I think in many ways, when you look at this, you know that there is a phenomenon. And so working backwards, we think about the data. Individual observations may or may not be accurate, but the big picture is certainly quite a compelling one.
So as your paper and your research goes through the gauntlet and gains credibility, what will be needed to gain the attention of state, local, federal drug enforcement officials to make use of this map and to deploy resources in areas where they really need to be?
Well, I think that you're playing a very important role in this process, and I really appreciate it. I think getting some of these findings out into the news, having people take a closer look at it, perhaps help to refine some of the methods that are being used and to make them a little bit more precise. I think that's obviously one step, is getting the information out there. And then I think a second step is for authorities in the federal, state, and local governments to realize the value of this information. You know, at face value, a price may not mean anything more to somebody than just how much does it cost. But prices actually contain some very valuable information that goes beyond just how much do you pay to buy whatever it is you're buying. And I think that realization needs to be implemented then in processes of data collection. I say this for a very specific reason. In 2012, the National Drug Intelligence Center was closed down. I mean, I think this may have had to do with budget cuts, because I know that the federal government was making significant cuts at the time. But it is my very sincere hope that an agency out there in the federal government is continuing to collect such data and will continue to make such data available to researchers, because these are very valuable data.
Now that you've produced this map, Dr. Chandra, what's next for your research? How does this get applied, and what's the next step for you?
There are actually two directions in which this research project is going. The first, and I'm finding it really exciting, is looking at the five other drug categories for which the NDIC produced price data. And to give you an example, they include MDMA, which is sometimes known as ecstasy, and methamphetamine. And if you think about the difference between, let's say, methamphetamine and cocaine, cocaine has to be imported from another country because the crop that produces it, the coca leaf, is grown in a particular geographic region. Methamphetamine, on the other hand, can be produced in somebody's home. We hear about these meth labs in the United States, right? And so, as you can imagine, with cocaine, prices are the lowest along the borders where we suspect cocaine is coming in the greatest amounts. And then it goes up as you move away from those borders. With methamphetamine, because it's being produced in somebody's lab within the country, we see a totally different pattern on the map. We see areas where the drug is very cheap within the United States that are not near borders. Sometimes they're in the middle of the country. And then they're surrounded with areas that are progressively getting more expensive, suggesting that there are hot spots of methamphetamine production within the United States, as we know.
Despite the fact that many states now have laws that require pseudoephedrine to be sold behind counters and not as accessible as it once was.
That's absolutely right. And so there are all kinds of very interesting studies that people are doing about some states, you know, making it difficult to buy pseudoephedrine over the counter, but happen to be neighbored by states where you can buy it over the counter. And what are the, you know, the effects of one state making it illegal versus another state keeping it legal? The second direction in which this research is going, you can view this map as being a network of cities. So, for example, are there cities through which the cocaine must flow in order to get to other cities? So are these cities crucial to the network in some sense? And once we start looking at this network through those eyes, we can start to isolate cities that are absolutely critical for the flow of cocaine across the country. And I think that can give drug enforcement authorities some additional insights into where they might want to allocate resources to try to disrupt these networks.
And today's transit city may be tomorrow's destination city.
It may very well be. So these networks may also change over time, and we need to keep an eye on that as well.
Dr. Siddharth Chandra is the director of the Asian Studies Center at Michigan State University and the lead author of this research. Fascinating work here. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.